Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, June 25th, 2018. The Kir Machar talks shift to Khartoum when the president says he's willing to compromise.
I see the pain in their faces. So I have come to really bring the unnecessary war in our country to an immediate end.
But at least one analyst doubts that more face-to-face talks will bring an end to the fighting.
The meeting was a failure. That's why they had to propose these other meetings in Khartoum and then in Nairobi and then back again in Addis.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leaders of Sudan, Uganda, and South Sudan have agreed to work together to end the fighting in South Sudan, according to remarks made this morning by the leaders in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. President Salva Kiir promised to compromise and stop the suffering of the South Sudanese people. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
President Kiir says he has come to Khartoum with an open mind and stands ready to compromise for the sake of peace in his war-torn country. He says he hopes rebel leader Riek Machar will do the same.
I have mentioned many times before that I feel the sufferings of our people directly because I stay with them and I know the economy of our country. I know the market and I see the pain in their faces. So I have come to really bring the unnecessary war in our country to an immediate end.
Areas of disagreement in Chapter 1 revolved mainly around power sharing at the national and state levels and an opposition proposal to dissolve the National Assembly. In Chapter 2, issues remain over security arrangements, specifically a demilitarized zone, the time frame on the reunification of forces, and the establishment of one National Army. President Kiir says he is ready to compromise on all of these issues so that peace can come to South Sudan.
This is a very important commitment so that we get ourselves out of the shame, this senseless internal conflict has put on us as the leaders of South Sudan, and to allow our people to enjoy their hard-earned independence in peace, unity, and prosperity.
President Yoweri Museveni of Uganda reiterated his commitment to work with the leaders in the region and to stop what he called the meaningless war in South Sudan, which he says affects its neighbors as well.
This war is meaningless and it will not bring any benefit to anybody. Not the people of South Sudan, not the neighbors, and not the whole world. South Sudan was coming up. Business was booming until we had this fighting in 2013.
President Kiir says he appreciates the role of Sudan President Omar al-Bashir and Ugandan President Museveni for their brotherly efforts to bring the war to an end in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Some political analysts in South Sudan say the IGAD-led direct talks between President Kiir and Machar are unlikely to end the nearly five-year conflict. One professor at the University of Juba says both men want peace on their own terms, making it nearly impossible to move the peace process forward. Another analyst says there is too much mistrust between the two men to get a lasting peace deal. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
Simon Monoja, a professor of social and economic studies at the University of Juba, says the face-to-face meetings between President Kiir and Machar are a good gesture for peace. But he says the failure to reach a deal during last week's meeting in Addis Ababa underscores how people should not pin their hopes on these two leaders for peace?
It is going to lead into complete failure. And it already failed. The meeting was a failure. That's why they had to propose these other meetings in Khartoum and then in Nairobi and then back again in Addis. That indicates that actually the process is going to drag on and on so long as the principals are left to decide on this issue of the peace. They will never decide. It is for them, they want to have a situation of winner takes it all.
Agustino Ting Mayai, a policy analyst at the Juba-based SAD Institute and a lecturer at the University of Juba's Center for Peace, says changing the venue of the talks from Addis Ababa to Khartoum and possibly Nairobi will not change the situation as long as the two are unwilling to compromise for the sake of peace.
What's holding away peace from South Sudan is not the lack of understanding of what's happening. The fact that there has not been any willingness from the parties or even seriousness from the mediators. And that can still manifest itself even in Khartoum.
Monoja says if the talks continue to drag on, the two leaders who have complete mistrust for one another should step aside and allow a neutral government to be formed, which can conduct free and fair elections.
Both of them are now illegitimate in the eyes of South Sudanese. The time of Salva Kiir is gone. It's only being renewed by parliament. Parliament, which is a rubber stamp parliament, is not really representing the people. And therefore, Riek Machar is once again. So both of them also can just defend each other now. I think they could have stepped down if they had the interests of South Sudanese. But by force, the country is going to bleed into total oblivion.
Mayai says bringing Kiir and Machar to work together again will only lead to another conflict, considering the strong mistrust the two have for each other.
The two leaders have worked together for roughly a decade. And what we have learned from their relationship working together, it's that they end up having that relationship faltering, and the result, it's a conflict. And so an advocacy to get the two leaders together again, especially considering what unfolded in 2016, it is what Einstein called doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, and that's insanity.
Monoja says unless the international community pressures Kiir and Machar into reaching a deal, the face-to-face talks will have no effect on the quest for peace in South Sudan. This report was prepared by Dimo Silva Aurelio. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
A South Sudanese blogger says the change of venue from Addis Ababa to Khartoum will not bring peace. If President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar avoid discussing the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan. John Penn says the people of South Sudan want peace and not pictures of Machar and President Kiir shaking hands.
From the pictures, Tanza, from the pictures, it seems there's a difference between Addis Ababa and Khartoum. So we have seen the handshake and all that. I didn't see the handshake from the latest pictures, but at least the posture is okay. I wish they had formed a circle. I just didn't want to see a parade. I wanted to see a circle so that the hands of Riek and Kiir, those three hands, could join from the other side. But it seems from the pictures, yeah, there is some peace around.
But are you sure these pictures are not only for camera? Are you sure that it's from inside their hearts?
At least, you know, from the camera, there's breaking news. Breaking news is always from the camera. And then we see how it unfolds later on. The follow-up is another day. But for today, at least people would feel like there is peace going on. If it is for cameras, okay, because we saw Museveni just popping up also in that place. And we said, okay, if his presence is going to add value, that's fine.
And what is so special about Khartoum? I mean, the three leaders met in Addis Ababa last week, and especially President Kiir and Riek Machar met face-to-face in Addis Ababa, and nothing came out according to reports that we were hearing from Addis. And now, why are they all of a sudden shaking hands and dancing in Khartoum? What is so special about Khartoum?
I am not seeing anything special. A venue cannot add anything to the hearts of these people. I don't believe in venues, changing venues. Maybe because of our noise, because we reacted, the South Sudanese and the world reacted, I mean, actually towards the very poor Antioch in Addis Ababa. That could actually drive them closer. But the venue cannot. I am seeing this show of the venues as some sort of interest by IGAD. They are just being kicked around like football. You have seen them in Addis Ababa. They are now going to Khartoum. And they are going to preserve some part of the HLRF articles for Kenya, for Uhuru. So it's like it's our turn to eat. So when they come back to Kenya, it will be a turn for Kenya. I'm not sure whether they will also not extend it to Kampala and Kigali and back to Arusha and Addis Ababa. We are getting dizzy. You know, we are losing it in the middle.
Yes. But looking at these efforts from Addis Ababa to Khartoum and later to Nairobi and if possible to Kampala, these are all avenues for, you know, seeking peace. Why are you not happy with that?
No, peace is not in the heart of the capital city of these East African countries. Peace is in the heart of Riek Machar and in the heart of Salva Kiir and in our hearts as South Sudanese. It's not in the cities of the region. If they really mean peace, they could do it in one location, in Addis Ababa or wherever. But now that they are being pushed around, there is a shuttle diplomacy, then a gang hugging, they can't hug alone until there is another person.
The South Sudanese leaders have not been able to solve this problem amongst themselves. And that's why the international community is coming in to mediate. Are you sure if it's left to South Sudanese, it will be resolved tomorrow?
I'm not an advocate for African solution to African conflict. I'm not an advocate for that because we have seen it in these small instances of national dialogue. We have seen it with the church in Addis Ababa. So it's not going to come. I am of the idea that the international community, the IGAD region, should bring in those bystanders like Paul Malone and the rest who are standing aside. The South Sudan Opposition Alliance, all should go on the table and should also be in the hug. I don't have any problem with the gang hug. I want all these gangs, the generals, to hug themselves, not Museveni to come in or the Ethiopian Prime Minister to be the third person to hug. We don't need them in the hugging. We need them in the pushing, to push them into hug. So that's what my stand is. I just want the rest of them to come in. We mean a group hug.
That is John Penn, South Sudanese blogger and delegate at the just-concluded talks in Addis Ababa. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from the Ugandan capital Kampala earlier today. In a few days, European Union leaders hold their annual summit, and migration will be at the top of the agenda. Yesterday, a mini-summit that was focused on the issue made little progress on creating a unified approach to the inflow of asylum seekers, refugees, and economic migrants from the Middle East, South Asia, and Africa, including Sudanese migrants. Journalist Catherine Field in Paris spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson about the EU's struggle to balance the needs of desperate newcomers with those of EU member states.
No, there is still talk about the possibility of reception, or some are calling them welcome, or even disembarkation centres outside of the EU. The places that have been talked about at the moment outside of the EU in particular are Albania, which of course is the European sphere. Also, we're talking about in North Africa, Algeria, Morocco, or even Tunisia, as well as Libya. Now, there has been no actual coming forward from any of these countries saying, yes, we could do this. So that has been a disappointment for the EU. They were hoping that if they got the UNHCR and the IOM together on this, then these centres could be set up quite quickly. But nothing has come forward on that. Where they have had movement is on the strengthening of the EU border and coast guard. There was in the pipeline an idea that this would be expanded to have some 10,000 patrol officials or border guards by 2027. Now, they've now brought that forward, and it looks as though that will all be in place by 2020. The only other concrete measure that's going to go before the summit later this week is that possibility of another 500 million euros being given to the EU's Africa Trust Fund to help in various ways, not just to economically but also socially to these countries where it's failed, that they've got to reach out and help the countries from where these migrants are coming from, and also to help the countries, the so-called transit countries, that these migrants are moving through as they make their way through to Libya.
Has there been any talk about doing something like reimbursing migrants for the costs that they've put out already to get to, say, Libya or wherever?
This is already in the works, and some of it comes through the IOM, some of it comes through the UNHCR. There are various programs whereby a sum of money is given out to help people set up when they get home. Certainly, we're not talking about the types of sums that some migrants have paid to get across the Mediterranean and up through Italy and France and further on. But there are those programs. They're very small programs, and not everyone is entitled to them. Some people who are clearly economic migrants pretty much get sent home, and their ticket home is all that they're going to get. But there are others who do get some sort of help that way.
Now, there are right now, as we speak, a couple of cases with ships afloat in the Mediterranean filled with migrants and not being able to find places to land. Was there any discussion on how to address this issue?
None at all. In fact, the mini summit in Brussels on Sunday really got underway in what can only be described as an antagonistic atmosphere, because, as you rightly say, the Italians and the Maltese had said yet more vessels are not allowed to dock in their port. And the French President Emmanuel Macron, as well as the Spanish Prime Minister, they had both said, come on, you have to help these people. And they were roundly criticized by Italy for not showing any understanding for the plight of the Italian government. So, you know, there's really no more, you know, finding a solution on that. All sides are so entrenched. On the one hand, you've got the French President, Emmanuel Macron, very clearly coming out and saying we have to deal with this as a European unit, not each single country. And Italy is saying, hey, we're out here, we're on our own, you've got to help us.
That was Catherine Field in Paris speaking with our colleague Kate Pound Dawson. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The leaders of both Zimbabwe and Ethiopia survived bombing attempts at rallies over the weekend. Find out what happened when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your greatest accomplishment in your community?
To see that women are empowered and to be independent and stand on their own. In my small way, I am doing this, but I want to extend it on a larger level.
I think for me, my greatest accomplishment will probably be picking up someone who doesn't have anything but has the intelligence, and maybe probably sponsoring the person through school.
I'm training myself so that I can add value to my community and come back to tell them that money does not define where you go. Your determination is what counts.
I come from a village where young boys and girls do not take school seriously. And by seeing me, it's like they get some kind of motivation.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The leaders of both Zimbabwe and Ethiopia survived bombing attempts at rallies over the weekend. Today in Zimbabwe, at least two people have died from injuries suffered in the bomb blast at a rally in Bulawayo, where President Emmerson Mnangagwa was speaking. It was the most serious violence in this election campaign. Reporter Kudzai Vinavashi speaks to some Zimbabweans about their reaction to the attack.
There has been an outpouring of messages of comfort and sympathy across the political divide following the apparent attempt to assassinate President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Munyara Dzidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament and political developments.
It's unfortunate that happened, and it's sad that those people were injured. There's reports that two people have died and that 49 people have been injured. I think it's very sad going into an election, and that heightens the situation in Zimbabwe. I think it's the first time we've experienced that form of violence during an election, period.
Dodo says the last politically linked bombing may have been in the early 1980s, just after the country's independence. The Saturday bombing is likely to result in tighter security and lower attendance at rallies from Mnangagwa's ZANU-PF. Darlington Tsozo is a Zimbabwean shop owner. He fears the attack may be the start of more trouble.
I think it's actually raising fears within people. It's one sign that can actually indicate that the elections will not be peaceful if something is not done to actually correct such things. Everyone wants to see a peaceful environment before the and after the elections.
Priti Chavango, a Harare resident, notes the attack occurred the day European Union election monitors arrived.
For me, it was the very same day that the EU observers came into the country, and I remember listening to them and they were speaking about how they are hoping that the election will be violence-free. I just hope that nothing worse will happen in the future.
Authorities have not yet indicated who might have been responsible for the blast. However, Dodo notes that there are many people who are still angry that the military last year forced President Robert Mugabe out of office after 37 years. Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, who is the former army chief, has said the state will provide all 23 presidential candidates with security ahead of the July 30th vote. Zimbabwe is no stranger to election violence. During the 2008 election campaign, hundreds of people died and thousands were beaten. In 2013, there was less violence, but still thousands of people reported being intimidated away from the polls. For VOA, this is Kudzai Shinawashe from Harare.
In World Cup results Sunday, England pounded Panama 6-1, Colombia defeated Poland 3-0, and Japan and Senegal drew 2-2. For reaction to the Senegal match, here is VOA's Gwen Uten.
Call it even Steven. Fans from both Senegal and Japan left the stadium in jubilation Sunday after their Group H match ended in a 2-2 draw.
Senegal! Senegal!
Oh, no. I mean, both teams had chances and it could have been anybody's game, you know. Though Senegal let Japan in because they were playing another tactics before, but it's all good. Both teams will do well.
Nipa!
Must be a very difficult game. Poland must be very good and tough team. So I think Japan should or must do the same or more than this game in Volgograd against Poland. I think so.
Japan twice came from behind to prove themselves worthy opponents in this tournament. Japan will face Poland in their final group match on Thursday. Senegal gave up their 2-1 lead late in the game, but their supporters were still in good spirits and looking forward to their next match against Colombia also on Thursday. And as players from both countries shared a draw on the field, fans on both sides shared a win off the field. I mentioned last week that two videos went viral of Japanese and Senegalese fans tidying up the stadium following their matches. Well, they were at it again on Sunday, united in Ekaterinburg Stadium with the common goal of leaving things just as they found it.
Because so this is means from our minds, so it's thanks for stadium. So because we get a big fan from stadium, we have to clean for our Japanese mind. It means like some michi. Yes, michi means the road of human mind.
We have to do that. We have to show the world that we are doing something nice. You know, we don't come here to leave the rubbish here. You know, we have to take it out after every game, you know, to show the world that we are nice people. You know, when we do that, next time, wherever we go, we have good reception. That's why we are doing it.
I think it's fair to say that Senegal and Japan have some of the classiest fans in football. I want to also mention that last week, Mohamed Salah was given honorary citizenship in the Russia's Chechnya Republic by their leader, Ramzan Kadyrov. The Chechen capital, Grozny, has played host to Egypt's training camp. And leading up to the World Cup, Kadyrov seized on opportunities to appear alongside Salah. It was reported Salah was angry at being singled out for special attention during the team's stay and would consider quitting international football. The Egyptian Football Association has since shot down those reports, saying Mo Salah has not informed Egypt of any plans to retire. Ahead of Monday's match between Egypt and Saudi Arabia, loyal fans adamantly declared that their nation needs Mo Salah.
I hope it will not be the last match for him in the Egyptian team, because we depend on him in most of the matches and most of everything. So I think we must find a solution for this issue.
Mohamed Salah is a very Egyptian, and what happened, I think it's just something in the media. He's a very, very good man, and he's a very, very good person, inside and out. And all of the world, you know, all the world know about Mo Salah. So he's the best player for me now in the world. So I wish him a very good luck, and he will do great today.
And I also wish Mo Salah good luck after his first World Cup. For South Sudan in Focus, I'm Gwen Uten in Washington.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Mukusa by Charlotte Dipanda.
Sisinyemba teten, eh yeah akoi. Sisinyemba mulema, eh yeah akoi. Natala mara bene nyami moto enu mati emba londoi, ah eh, oh yeah ah. Natala mara bene nyami moto enu masengemba sese, ah eh. Natala mara bene nyami moto enu mabolembe dube ah eh oh yeah Natala mara bene nyami moto enu malakemba mese ah eh oh yeah Natala mara bene nyami moto enu masengamba sisi mubie dimba eh nuye namba banande asanga pe mulema eh ah eh oh yeah Natala mara bene nyami moto enu mabolembe dube mubie dimba eh nuye namba banande asanga pe mulema eh ah eh sisi nyemba tete
Listening to Charlotte Dipanda with the song Mukusa. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. Let us know how you like the show. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you can join us back here again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.